This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the Collector's Compass, the official podcast of Collector's MD, where we explore the intersection of collecting, mental wellness, and responsible engagement in the hobby. I'm your host, Alex Efron, founder of Collector's MD. And today, we're continuing our conversation with Chris Hodge McGill, co-founder of Card Ladder. In part one, we unpacked Chris's journey into the hobby. We talked about nostalgia and the founding principles behind Card Ladder. In part two, we're diving into the state of the hobby, the language we use, natural allies, and what responsible collecting looks like going forward. Let's jump in. Chris, welcome back to the show.
Alex, it's great to be back. Very happy that coincidentally today, the Card Ladder brand and the Collectors MD brand were able to announce an affiliate partnership. Very exciting. And it's great to be back for a part two, man.
Can you hear me? I just switched my mic from my AirPods to the Yeti.
Yes, I can hear you. And don't worry if you see somebody on my my porch either or my deck either. There's some repairs being done to my very shoddy porch. I just noticed that too. So don't be alarmed if you see that.
Of course, no worries. Yeah, if somebody's sneaking up behind you, I'll let you know.
Please. Yes, thank you.
I appreciate you mentioning our partnership. It's an affiliate partnership, and I couldn't be more excited about it. As a matter of fact, for those listening and for those who haven't seen the news yet that we announced today on our website and social media, bear with me. I'll actually just pull it up, and then we can get into some of these topics that I just mentioned. And so, pull up the website. There we go. And so, yeah, like Chris mentioned, we're super excited to announce that Collectors MD has officially joined the Card Ladder affiliate program at Collectors MD. You know, our mission is simple. It's to help collectors with intention, not compulsion. And that means providing the right tools, resources, and support that keep the hobby joyful, sustainable, and healthy. And so, as many of you guys, I'm sure already know, Card Ladder has been one of the most trusted names in the hobby for tracking card values, comps, and providing transparent market data for some time now. And so by partnering together, we're making it easier for our community to access reliable tools that cut through the hype and support smarter decision-making. And so here's what this means. Our community members now have direct access to Card Ladder through our affiliate link, which you can find across all of our socials, as well as our website, collectorsmb.com. And so by signing up, you're not just gaining a powerful tool for intentional collecting, you're also supporting the ongoing work and the movement we're doing to build a healthier hobby for everybody. So this isn't about speculation or chasing flips or trying to make a quick buck. It's about equipping collectors with the knowledge and the accountability to stay aligned with their goals and values. And we've always said from day one, Collectors MD is not anti-hobby. We are pro-support. And so this partnership is just another step towards ensuring collectors have the resources that they need in order to thrive and be successful. So before we dive in, Chris, from your perspective, just curious, what excites you about this partnership, and how do you see it helping collectors make more intentional decisions?
A lot of the things you just said, man. I think the ambition and the vision behind the service and the resources that you're aiming to provide you know, I was just scrolling this, actually the recent updates that you guys have posted to the site. I saw a number of different medical professionals and health service providers you guys have teamed up with recently, and having that sort of resource and having it comfortable and having it, and having somebody who is as amenable and open and accessible as you and your team, you know, I just think that can only result in good things. So
100%.
These resources are really, really thoughtfully put together. And I think this is a wonderful resource for collectors, especially because, you know, up until your arrival, I don't think anybody had really formally thought to address these concerns. And now you're doing that and you're continuing to amass a network and resources. And that's something that's pretty cool for us to play a small role in facilitating.
Yeah, man. And I really appreciate you saying that and highlighting that. You know, at Collectors MD, we're all about recognizing the importance of making recovery more accessible, right? We want it to be stigma-free. We want it to be community-driven. And so I am not a licensed therapist. We are not doctors at Collectors MD. We provide peer support. We offer weekly support meetings and tools and resources to help you on your journey to a more intentional hobby and, you know, in your collecting journeys. And so we want to also make sure that we're providing professional resources for those that might need it. And so there are a few here that Chris mentioned. Right Choice Recovery is a brand new one. They're a great option. They're based here in New Jersey. Technically, I'm in Pennsylvania right now, but we are in Jersey, and they are wonderful. I'm actually a graduate of their program. They offer support for those who are looking for support and solutions around compulsive gambling and behavioral addiction. And so they're there for you. We also have partnered with folks on the individual level. So we have Dr. Rick Shaw, as well as Taya Kim, who is a licensed therapist based in Los Angeles. They both have offered support on an individual basis to our community. We have partnered with Gamban and Birches. So we're working on building out our referral network for those that might need, again, that professional guidance beyond the weekly meetings and the group text. So really, really appreciate you calling that out and allowing me to give it a quick plug. I'm going to take that off the screen and we're going to dive into our conversation today. So the last time we met, we kind of unpacked a number of things in a very short time. I know we're limited on time today again, so we're going to try to get through all of our segments. But we touched on your path into the hobby. We talked a little bit about, you know, the 90s and growing up as a kid in the collecting world. You touched on some of your favorite pieces, and then we got a little bit into what Hodge stands for, which is House of Jordans. You talked about that and your segue into launching Card Ladder early in the pandemic. We got a little bit into guardrails, responsible messaging, and shared values. And then we kind of paused there. So we're going to continue that conversation. For those of you who are new to this show, The Collector's Compass, you can check out episode 9. There should be a link either below or at the end of this video where you can watch part 1 if you would like. So jumping into the conversation, we're going to touch on the state of the hobby, national breaks, and culture shifts. So we had chatted about a month ago offline about your experience at National this year. You kind of described it as a circus, where it was just like lines were out the door. The Breakers Pavilion was absolutely roaring. The main stage literally was drowned out by Breakers, Breakers speakers like blasting into the crowd, right? And that image says it all. The sort of thoughtful conversations about other things like, I don't know, like art, design, and collecting have really just been getting swallowed up in the collecting world by all of this noise that we're seeing from break culture. And so I think that's a really powerful metaphor for where we're at as a hobby, right? On one side, you have purists, you have people who still build sets, you have collectors who love the stories behind their cards. But on the other, you've got this break-driven high pace, you know, FOMO driven culture where it's all about the adrenaline. It's all about the lights and the spectacle. So I'm curious from your perspective, Chris, how do you see the balance between purists and the sort of break driven culture as it evolves?
Yeah, I can only speak to this issue from my perspective as an attendee, as a collector, as you know, somebody who returned with great passion to collecting about 9 years ago in 2016, and then also collected as a kid in the 90s. I can only speak from my perspective, and I don't want to tell other people how to enjoy their hobby, but I can speak to how I enjoy mine. And the way that I encountered the National this year, so our booth was fortunately in the corporate section, which I have different thoughts on the continuous growth of that section, but that's slightly different topic. And I don't want to be hypocritical and like be too critical of the growing corporate section, because I'm part of that growing corporate section too, but I'm also a collector and I'm a collector first. And my love for this industry and this passion of card collecting, it predates my participation as a professional in this space, and it will post date it too if I ever stop working in this space. So I've always have that collector hat on first. And so to get to the point here, I didn't have that much direct engagement with other areas of the show on a hourly basis or anything like that. But sometimes I would walk through different sections if I was trying to get somewhere. And one of those times was, I think it was Friday at around noon. I was walking over to check out a panel that Christina was hosting. She was hosting Gene McLeod of Arena Design, an icon in sports card collecting, especially among 90s collectors, for the fact that she and her husband designed some of the most iconic cards that were ever made. And pretty much take your pick of one of the beautiful Fleer Skybox offerings from the 90s. And it was most likely the McLeod team who created under the banner of Arena Design. It was most likely one of or both of them who made it. Jambalaya, precious metal gems, etc. That's their work. And so she was speaking. She one of the designers, and she really first showed up on the scene as an active participant in the content landscape around 6 or 7 years ago, when she was interviewed on the Cardboard Chronicles YouTube channel. And if anybody hasn't listened to Gene McLeod on Cardboard Chronicles, it's fantastic. It's just it's one of my favorite pieces of hobby content ever made, still to this day. I'll go revisit it. But anyway, she was speaking, doing a Q&A session that Christina was hosting, and then so too was Carvin Chung. And Carvin is known colloquially as the architect, and he was instrumental in the development of various offerings from the 2000s era and later in sports card design and in product creation. So he was part of product teams and he was architecting the vision for products, including Exquisite, including the debut Exquisite product in 2003-04 in basketball.
Wow.
And he also was involved in designing and creating the Immaculate Collection product from Panini's line. So here we have, just among those two individuals, Gene McLeod and Carvin Chung, we have two of the most influential and important people in the history of this industry, in the history of collecting, in the history of sports card manufacturing, and more particularly in the history of sports card design. These are our icons. These are two of the most impressive people, in my view, two people that if ever they are within walking distance or even driving distance and they're giving a talk or sharing their point of view, I will attend that. I as a collector, I get so much energy just from listening to those two and other people of a similar esteem give their thoughts and tell tales from their hobby experience and their professional experience. I can't get enough of it. And I think a lot of other collectors feel that way too. And so those two with Christina sort of shepherding the discussion and moderating it, they were doing a panel that was an hour long. And it was just, honestly, it was an atrocity in the sense that they were up there giving incredible content and incredible answers, and it was all but completely drowned out by noise from surrounding stages that were just constantly filling the air with, you know, loud proclamations of this, look at this card. And, you know, there was like this repeated shouting about Bo Jackson breaking the internet that kept coming through. Like I will never forget that Bo Jackson broke the internet on that day, because I just heard it like 100 times. And not to take away from those people who are, that's the part of their role. And so I'm not telling them how to do their jobs or anything like that. I would never do that. But it was a metaphor, Alex, the metaphor of this amazing piece of hobby content of some of the icons in my eyes of the sports card passion, of the sports card collecting enterprise.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know, when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself, talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
There are two of them on stage together giving this talk, and all I want to do is listen to it. And there isn't even enough room in this giant national convention center. There isn't enough room for them to do it in a manner in which anybody could peacefully and quietly listen to it. I mean, I sat there and I listened to the whole thing. I had a headache afterwards, but I sat there and I listened to the whole thing. People would come by, they would sit down for a few minutes, they would be intrigued, but they would just get up and leave, because who wouldn't? I mean, it's like having a bullhorn in your ear constantly. And I just thought that was a metaphor for the state of collecting right now, that there are really loud voices that are being amplified, that are drowning out so many of the rest of us who just want to listen to two of our icons give an hour-long talk at the biggest gathering of collectors that happens once a year.
Wow. You really painted a picture there, Chris. What you articulated, I imagine, would be like trying to watch, a classical performance, or like, you know, the opera or something that's like sort of carry some prestige and you know, requires some sense of, you know, maturity, all in the meanwhile you're being like, you know, or you've got like a Taylor Swift concert next door with a bunch of screaming teenagers. I don't know if I worded that right, but you get the point. I mean, that's just exactly what it is. It's this giant circus, it's a zoo that has taken over not just the national, but the hobby as a whole. And so to your point, like, there's nothing necessarily wrong with that, but I think we just need to collectively do a better job of segmenting these different sort of categories, right? You have a sort of a more refined conversation, or something like exquisite, which is a product for a very specific type of collector being discussed, or you mentioned the creator of that set. Like, that should be happening in a different venue, I think, than something like a Breakers Pavilion, right? So I think maybe looking ahead to next year, the National can just do a better job of making sure that some of these smaller, more niche parts of the hobby that a lot of people still love and appreciate maybe get their spotlight, but like in a different setting, so that it's not completely drowned out by all the excess noise. And so
can I jump in really quick and just add one thing to that, Alex? The irony is that I do think that breaking companies, breakers, and maybe even some of the audience and spectators there. I think had they known what was going on right next door to them, they might have taken a great interest in that. Like they're breaking these products that that these people have had a hand in either inspiring or directly creating. I mean, that is just, that's such fuel for the collector. It's just so much collecting energy, I think. And it's just, it's like a coordination problem that is not the fault of the National. And it's not the fault of anybody. It's just that there's an opportunity that hasn't been seized yet, which is sort of to get us all on the same page and coordinate us here. Because I think there's actually tremendous overlap. I think had they known what was going on right next door to them, I think they all would have stopped and just listened for a few minutes at least, just because of how instrumental these artists are in the creation of these cards that we love and the products that they're selling. So I think I sort of take that baton from you, because I think you packaged it really nicely. There's opportunity here to recast the venue and to get people on the same page here. This is a Wild West in many ways, that we're just all of us, from the National to all of us who are there, we're just trying to make it work. You know, the more organized we can get, I think there's a massive opportunity there that can kind of get everybody on the same page.
Right. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. You know, sometimes I just feel like the hobby has become a scene out of like a zombie apocalypse movie, like The Walking Dead, right? Like obviously a show, but you got crowds of people that are just like, it's like herds moving like zombies, just following Breaker from one hit to the next. And the chase just takes over, you know, instead of enjoying the cards, the history, the nostalgia, the artistry, it's all about the adrenaline rush of ripping. And so that's exactly what was taking place at the National. It was just in real time, right? And so I think the dangerous side of that is when the thrill becomes the only fuel. We stop seeing collectors as individuals with stories and start seeing them as bodies in a crowd just chasing the next dopamine hit. And it just becomes so loud and chaotic, and it drowns out the very joy that brought us here in the first place. And unfortunately, a lot of the new folks in the hobby may have not come from a place of joy. They may have been chasing the adrenaline and the dopamine from the get-go, right? Because maybe they saw a Fanatics ad on a DraftKings app or something like that. So who knows? But do you think that it's possible at this stage for the pendulum to sort of swing back in the other direction towards this, like, you know, purity, the set building, the singles, the folks that really appreciate and enjoy the artistry that comes with this space? Or do you think it's just like, we're just at a point now where we have to adapt and figure out what this lane looks like through a different lens based on all of the noise around us?
I think it can. I don't think it's inevitable that it will. I think it can, but we have to be, as a community, intentional about it. And we really have to think about something that you spotlight all the time, which is sustainability. This is something that impacts all of us, whether we are customers of a break or whether we're collectors, even hunting singles and putting sets together. We don't have infinite resources, and we try to be as disciplined and stay within a reasonable budget allocation. And under that context, and just given inflation, given the rising price of these products, given the growing scope of this industry, and the demand pressures that applies, that even puts more upward tendency on prices of the things that we want to collect, that we're going to be able to not always be buying things, you know, and not always be transacting things. And that instead, right, that we can have other ways that, like, I'll speak for myself as a collector. You know, I get a mail day once a month or something. Maybe it just, sometimes I go months without picking up any new cards. Sometimes I go months, you know, picking up as many as a dozen. It can vary, but as a collector, I'm always trying to add cool cards to my collection. But very rarely can I just go buy everything that I can't go buy everything that I want. Very rarely can I even get any card that I want. So then I have to fill the void somehow, right? It's like, I still want to engage with collecting. I still want to, you know, think about and process it, and I think that is applicable to customers of breaks. I think it's applicable to everybody. Is that there a way that we can still enjoy collecting, but without it costing us money. And I think that there is. I think one way that that void gets filled quite adequately is through quality content that takes an interesting approach to thinking about collecting or thinking about the industry or thinking about some aspects of it. I think content is one way that I really enjoy the hobby without actively adding things to my collection. And another way is through, like, and this sort of ties into what Carvin and Christina and Gene were doing together, sort of research, or like the intersection of content and research, where, you know, listening to these creators sort of talk about their art, you know, that sends me scrambling to look at checklists and to study, you know, other content that has been made that talks about the history of sets and the history of cards. And all of a sudden, you know, I'm spending a few weekends putting together some spreadsheets that are sort of tracking different sets or offerings of different players or different products that I wasn't aware of that these creators worked on. And now I'm spending time that, and it's not, and I'm not, you know, super amped up, you know, caught in the cycle of buying, but instead I'm doing research. I'm sort of informing future decisions. I'm learning about the landscape and the menu of cards that are offered. I take so much inspiration from that process. So I think these are some of the ways, like the tools of research, the tools of planning ahead, sort of saying like, oh, this is a really cool card, so I'm going to be patient. I'm going to wait for it to show up, and sort of budget and save and try to find the opportunity to add this card to my collection if I can. And that combined with content creation and consuming hobby content, and then the community aspect of it, and, you know, having relationships with fellow collectors and encouraging other collectors when they're building their collections, they do the same thing for me, giving opinions, giving advice, giving insights, you know, developing philosophies and approaches to collecting. These are all amazing ways that I engage with the hobby without having to buy or sell or trade anything. I can engage on multiple levels. And I think that path is viable. I think we can, that I'm living proof that it can happen, that I can go months without buying a card and enjoy my hobby experience tremendously. So I think it can happen, Alex, but I don't know if it will. I think as a community, we have to sort of get intentional about figuring out how we can do that, because like you said, sustainability is a real issue right now.
Yeah, really well said, Chris. I totally agree. I think intentional collecting, maybe some people look at that as like vintage or mature collecting. And I think I thought about this recently, and I feel like you can kind of compare it to like fine wine, right? It takes patience. There's an experienced palate, right? You're not just chasing the sugar rush of soda. You're trying to savor something that's aged and full of history, right? And, you know, with mature collecting, instead of doing things like ripping for quick hits, you start to appreciate cards with stories, legacies, permanence. And over time, I think that joy becomes less from adrenaline and more from craftsmanship, history, rarity, artistry. And so like fine wine, it's all about patience, appreciation, and maturity. And so I think there are just levels to it. And I think that form of collecting can coexist in the same reality of modern break culture, and perhaps even intertwine in some ways. And I brought a little show and tell today, because like you, I've been trying to collect with more intention, obviously embody everything that I put out, you know, ever since launching Collectors MD. And so I picked up a piece that I felt like just really kind of checked all the boxes for me when it comes to some of these things that I'm talking about. And I'll try to show it here on the screen. It's a Ray Allen, first off the line, Green Shimmer from Prism Deca. So it's this year's set, but it's kind of paying homage to, a past Prism set. And with Panini losing the license, probably one of the last times you're going to see this design. Anyway, it's first on print out of 15. Ray Allen was and still is one of my favorite players of all time. You know, he got game, Jesus Shuttlesworth, one of my favorite movies of all time. If you haven't seen that, go check it out. Denzel Washington crushes it. But Ray Allen is actually a good actor, especially when he was young. But I mean, Seattle Supersonics jersey, like growing up, the Sonics were just always such an iconic team. Anyway, it was relatively inexpensive. I got it for under $100. But just such a beautiful piece that I feel like, again, just checks all the boxes and, something I wanted to pick up to kind of, as like a little memento for everything I talk about and share in these meetings, and just kind of like as a means of like, you know, it's okay to still collect with intention as long as you're doing it thoughtfully and mindfully. And so that's what it's all about. And so what role should some of these influencers and creators, you know, beyond myself, beyond you, what kind of role do you think they should play in sort of setting healthier norms across the board?
Well, I think you've teed up a perfect question, because you just gave the illustration that I like. As an audience member, I consume a lot of hobby content. That's often the background noise, if not a focal point, when I'm working every single day, 8-10 hours. I consume a lot of hobby content. And I think that what you just did, okay, so you showed a Ray Allen card. It's from 2024-25 Prism Deca. He's in a Supersonics gold jersey. It's the first of 15. It's a green shimmer parallel. It's an autograph card. Dude, those bullet points right there, six, seven bullet points. I mean, you could talk about that card for an hour, and I know you could. Right. And you and I could sit here and do a whole episode on that card and about this, you know, how many times did they wear that gold jersey when he was playing for the Supersonics? And, you know, we could, one thing I love to do with cards, I love to try and photo match. So could we photo match that image? Could we figure out what game it came from? You know, and talk about the legacy of Ray Allen and the different arcs of his career and sort of what he stood for as a professional athlete and how he transitioned from being an all-star and an alpha to a role player later in his career. He also has had some participation in the hobby over the years too. I think he owns a few of his cards. He's a really interesting guy. I mean, we could talk about him at length. You know, you made a quick reference to sort of Prism Deca and how it's a product that has a retro design that calls back to earlier issues of Prism. I mean, there's so many things to talk about on that little 2.5 by 3.5 inch piece of cardboard. there's right. So much content there. Like that, I crave that content as a collector. And
this podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know, when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself, talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Yeah. And it's content that's really positive, I think, for me as an audience member, because, you know, I'm vicariously enjoying your card through you. You know, right. So like your energy is infectious to me. I see the passion you have for collecting this item. I might not love Ray Allen as much as you. I might not be as big of a fan of Deca, or maybe I'm more. It doesn't really matter. What matters is I'm living that mail day through you, or that collection show off through you. And I get to hear and think about your collecting philosophies and your approaches and what you value. And then that can reflect back onto me. And then that can help me further develop and advance. And we just, it's a never ending back and forth, a never ending evolution as a collector that I have as an audience member. And I love shows that talk about the industry, that talk about pricing, that talk about the markets, that talk about, you know, experiences, card show experiences, owning a shop. I love all that content, but I really crave collector content where it's somebody showing a card, showing why they picked it up, what it means to them, what all the different angles and levels of meaning that card has. I literally think you just gave the blueprints for the content that at least me as an audience member that I crave, and I think all of us crave on some level. If we love cards, if we're buying cards, I think a lot of the times we've just never really been shown that there's so much depth that really lies beneath these cards. When we think about product lineages, when we think about the biographies of these players, the significance of the jersey they're wearing, rarity, design elements, so on and so forth. There's so much there that I literally think you just gave the blueprint.
Yeah, really well said. I agree. I think, it's an amazing thing when you can talk about a piece of cardboard for hours at length and just be completely fulfilled from that conversation. And it doesn't even have to belong to you, right? It could belong to somebody else. And this piece alone, like, you know, again, kind of going back to tying new age collecting with sort of more refined, mature collecting, I think this piece speaks volumes in that it's still possible, right? Because it's a brand new set, right? That came out, I think, this year. But it's a throwback. It's paying homage to an old design, a Hall of Fame player who no longer is in the league. And there's so many things about it that just, I think, are so powerful. And that's what collecting should be all about. I'll show one more quick example here. And this is a little bit different, but this is like an $8 card that I picked up during the week of National. And it's from first year Mosaic football. It's of, you know, a lot of people would consider Patrick Mahomes maybe the greatest of all time. That's very subjective and debatable, but a beautiful color match with the red and yellow sort of reactive pattern on the Mosaic. I've always been a sucker for Mosaic. Mosaic is sort of what brought me back into the hobby back during the pandemic. And this, along with Saquon, same sort of thing, the blue and red on the New York Giants, you know, being from the tri-state area, having been a graduate of Penn State, Saquon has always been a special player to me. Obviously, he's now on the Eagles and just won a Super Bowl, but I think I picked this up for $5. And these are just two pieces that I like to call sort of collecting with intention pieces, right? I picked these up because I like them, not because you like them or because the market says that I should like them or shouldn't like them, but because I like them. And I'll tell you what, if this parallel happened to be a one of one or even, you know, number to 10, I guarantee this card would fetch well over $1,000, right? Maybe 2,000. Same with this one. And it's I think this is a great example of how sort of the market and the breakers dictate the direction of where the hobby goes. Because if these were hyped up pieces from a hyped set that had a one of one stamp on the back, everybody would be talking about them. Everybody would want them. But because they're, you know, a part of a general release retail product that anybody can access, it just kind of falls under the radar. Nobody knows about them. And, you know, you might be able to pick them up in a dollar bin at your next card show. So anyway, without going too much on a tangent here, I just thought that was worth sharing because, again, we're all about collecting with intention. We obviously have two different lanes, one that focuses on abstinence for those who just can't have a healthy relationship with collecting anymore. And we respect that and we say that's okay. And we're here for those people. But we have another group of people who still want to collect and just do so in a more intentional and mindful way. So I think the influencers and creators have a lot of impact on that. And again, it's all about what they hype up. This week, you're seeing the owners of various pretty large break groups. I'm not going to shout anybody out or call anybody out, but you see these Instagram posts of the owners talking about how this is the biggest release of, you know, hobby history, with Flawless and Immaculate and Bowman Chrome and Prism Black dropping for the first time, and all of these things that Panini is rolling out because they're losing the license. And it's like, let's just take a beat here. Let's take this one step at a time. Let's talk about each and every product maybe for like a moment instead of just throwing them all out at us at once. I mean, it's just so incredibly overwhelming. And I can only imagine what a brand new consumer who has no idea what they're getting themselves into is thinking, right? When they see these sort of, you know, advertisements, which is what they are more or less. They're just promoting their live breaks. And so let's transition here because I know we're already coming up on time. The language of collecting, investment versus speculation. And this is something we spoke about briefly in part one of our conversation. But one of my favorite points you made is that sports cards are not just investments in the traditional sense, right? They're speculations. Words matter. And when creators brand it as sort of investing, a lot of breakers love to do that. What an investment piece. It kind of blurs the line, especially for kids, especially for some of these newcomers that we're talking about who don't understand the associated risks, right? And so we talk a lot about this at Collectors MD. It's possible to care about the value without being consumed by it. But when hype sort of masquerades as investing, that's when collectors start to get hurt, I feel. And so how do you explain the difference between investment and speculation to collectors? I know you sort of already answered this in part one, but I want to dive into this a little bit deeper. I have a few other questions, and I'm going to just ask you all three of them at once so that you can kind of formulate your answer. But in addition to that, why does precise language matter when we're shaping culture, and what risks do you see when hype or marketing obscures reality?
Yeah, I mean, the lowest hanging fruit here in terms of how I can most directly and succinctly answer this is an example that you gave as we were leading up to the question, which is the hype surrounding these new product releases, that there's opportunity to balance that discussion. And that too often, and this isn't unique to breaking companies or any content creator. It's almost part and parcel of an organic excitement that we get for cards, and that's we are exploitable, I think, because we are so passionate about cards, or at least that's the case for some of us, that we can get swept away in claims of what's historic. You know, like I thought that you took such a measured tone when you were describing the first year mosaic color match Mahomes and Barkley that you had. You didn't oversell it, but you made factual points. This is the first year of mosaic. These are color matches. These are affordable cards. You might even get lucky enough to find these in a dollar box. These mean an incredible amount to me. I think Patrick Mahomes is an all-time great player already, and Saquon Barkley is a recently minted Super Bowl winner who I have, you know, some shared history with in terms of, you know, all the things you mentioned with Penn State, Philadelphia, and so on and so forth. I mean, I thought that was just it was a measured tone. It made a compelling case. It didn't hype it up. You didn't try to tell me these were the best cards in history, but you showed why they're very meaningful to you. I mean, that's the demonstration, you know. That, and like when these products, breaks, investments are being hyped, sometimes it can just go too far. The ability to strike the balance of presenting a factual, compelling case, but not overselling, you know, that balance is important. And it's not always as easy to strike as it might seem, you know, because people really do get swept up and believe or drink their own Kool-Aid for a while. I say that because I've done it. You know, when I get a new mail day and of something I'm really excited about, I can get overly excited about it. You know, I can start to believe in it a little bit more than I would if I could put myself in my shoes a month out, you know? So there's the balance. There's the balance of the excitement versus being factual, and sticking to the factual nature of things, I think is a great remedy and a great antidote. And so I encourage everybody to listen back to part one, where I sort of went into more of the technical breakdown of the concept of investment versus speculation, sort of how speculation is something that maybe lives under the umbrella of investment or maybe sits adjacent to it. And that investment has more of a, at least in technical finance terms, it means something a little bit more precise than what a speculation is, what a speculation means, and that preserving that distinction, reserving the word investment for revenue generating assets and reserving the word speculation for things whose value is more derived on future forecasts of market demand, it can really kind of help preserve the distinction between what drives the value of a sports card versus what drives the value of a dividend paying stock, you know, and right. That's like something we could spend an hour talking about. You know, it's a really fine point. I think we gave it some good treatment in the first part, but I think that the antidote is just being factual. Like if we ever find ourselves, you know, erring on the side of exuberance or just irrational optimism or euphoria, that we can counteract it by just going back to the facts, you know, just sticking with the facts. Like is this flawless product? How historic is it? You know, is it the likely last NBA licensed flawless product? Probably. All signs indicate that it is. But beyond that, you know, I mean, there's over a decade worth of Flawless releases, right? And this isn't the first, right? So like the facts, understanding the facts of the case can really counteract that by sort of saying, yeah, are we going to be excited about the new Flawless? Are there going to be great cards in there? Is this a unique special product? Yes, yes, yes. But also, you know, let's stay within the realm of facts here. Are we really making history here in a sense that needs to be overly promoted? Probably not.
Yeah, that's a great point. I feel like, you know, we're just on the heels of arguably the greatest or most hyped basketball rookie class we've ever seen with Victor Wembanyama, right? I mean, he was the headline, and there's really no point of even bringing up any of the other players when you've got such a generational talent, right? And it's like every single product that came out that had Victor Wembanyama in it as a rookie, every breaker said that this is the best product of all time. This is the hottest product. You have to join the breaks. Again, like the relentless push around FOMO and just if you miss this, you're going to miss the boat and that's it. We're moving on without you. That sort of mindset, that sort of messaging is dangerous. It's predatory. And so when we're on the heels of that and we're now pivoting to the next class, and mind you, this class isn't all that great in comparison to classes from the last 4 or 5 years. I mean, it's pretty deep. You have a handful of players like Stephon Castle and Matas Buzelis and Reese Shea. I mean, it's a good class, but there's really no standout superstar like we had in Victor, or we've had in Anthony Edwards, or Cade Cunningham, or Cooper Flagg coming up, right? And so when we're using the same language, again, language is key here, the same messaging to promote these products as like, this is the last ever, you have to join, or you know, you're gonna miss every other opportunity in life. It's mind-blowing that people get sucked in. Again, you know, I'll harken back to the Walking Dead reference, where you just have these mindless zombies just walking in herds, following the breaker, doing as they say, listening to them like they're in the next coming of Jesus, right? Like I digress, but it's frustrating at times, because you know, you just want to kind of get people to wake up. Right. It's like lights on, no one's home. We just want people to start waking up, smelling the coffee, realizing that if you don't join that break tomorrow, it's not the all and be all. If you don't pick up that investment piece that, you know, such and such from such and such break group is telling you that you have to pick up, you know, things are going to be okay. I promise. So anyway, we talk a lot about that in our weekly meetings. And, you know, I think the language and the way that consumers are fed information is something that we need to see a shift in. It's probably not something that's going to change in the immediate future, because that's just how marketing works. And as somebody who's been in marketing and advertising their entire career, I could tell you that at the end of the day,
this podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know, when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself, talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Companies care about is revenue, and they'll do any and everything, whether it's predatory or not, to get that revenue. And so, again, Collectors MD exists so that there is a safety net for you to fall back on when you're starting to feel that sense of drain. That sense of I'm just getting rinsed by this industry, I'm just getting beat up hand over fist every single day, and there's no place for me to go. Now that place exists. So we're going to transition to our last segment here, Chris. We're calling it Partnerships and Natural Allies. And so, again, when we spoke one-on-one before the last episode, you mentioned how marketplaces like ComC or shops like Burbank are natural allies to what we're building, right? Because they focus on things like singles and set building and community, as opposed to just, you know, everything that we're seeing in today's modern hobby culture, which basically revolves around breaking. And I think that's a really refreshing way to think about it. And for Collectors MD, we've always said that, you know, again, we aren't anti-hobby. None of this is anti-hobby. We love the hobby. I mean, I just showed you, like, I still love collecting. We just want collectors to know that there are alternatives that don't rely on ripping until you're broke, and allies really, really matter. And so, again, I'm going to ask you these questions all at once. You can give me your answer. I want to be sensitive and respectful of your time because I know we're coming up on it. But who do you see as the most natural allies for creating a healthier ecosystem? I know I just mentioned ComC and Burbank. I'm curious if there are any others that maybe come to mind. What responsibility do things like grading companies, marketplaces, and data platforms like Card Ladder have in supporting collectors? And if you could design one cross-industry initiative tomorrow, what would that look like?
Those are fantastic questions. And I'm not sure that I'm going to have a great answer to any of them, although that doesn't stop me from enjoying them as questions and thinking that the spirit of them, the spirit behind them, and the vision behind them is something that I admire and I take quite a bit from inspirationally. And I think that, you know, I don't even know. I love the point about natural allies, and I do agree that that some certainly exist. But I don't even know, and I'm not saying that you said otherwise, but I don't even know that the allies need to be natural. I think that all sorts of alliances can form as we continue to sort of bring to the table different points of view. Like, that's something that I really admire about what you're doing, and I can relate to your position because you're in a position where you're bringing in expertise from a professional field and from personal experiences in other walks of life, and you are watching things that you know at a high level unfold right in front of your eyes, and you're sort of seeing people who aren't as experienced or knowledgeable about it sort of, you know, get hypnotized by it, and you're just like guys, like, I know of which I speak here, you know. And, yeah, and all you can do in that position, all we can do when we find ourselves in that position, is just hope that light and truth are things that will serve as disinfectants, that will bring to the fore, you know, all we can do is shine a light on it, you know. But we do, we have voices, we can share points of view, and we can put our faith in the arc of history sort of bending in the right direction, but that it takes time, and it's not going to happen overnight, and that just repeatedly, even when it's taxing, even when it's burdensome, continuously, you know, making the points and sharing a point of view, that can hopefully that will be very effective over the long run. And I want to bring it back to sort of that picture that I painted at the beginning of the episode, sort of the circus next to the conference, you know, where we, on the one hand, we have these great creators speaking, and on the other hand, we have this very aggressive selling of products, and that there is, I think, a very natural overlap between them, and that we can, but how do we get there? I think we can get there. I think whoever solves how to temper the euphoric push of product salesmanship with the by channeling the fascinating appeal of sort of the art and the collectability of cards, whoever can bridge that gap, I think, will do a tremendous service to both sides. They will do a tremendous service to the more calm, passionate collector and the really jazzed up, hyped up break participants, but because if there is a passion that we all share when we all feel the rush and the joy and the excitements of pursuing a card that we want to own. I think that this is a very, very early, we are in the very early days of figuring out how to make the compelling case for card collecting in a way that resonates. But I do think it exists. I do think that there is a big natural overlap, and that there is a path that can be forged there. So, you know, I feel like we could do an episode every week, Alex, or we could keep talking about this stuff, you know.
Yeah. But it's also intriguing, and like the more we talk about it, the more you share your insight. And Chris, you know, not to blow smoke, but you're just really, really, and I'm sure you've heard this before, just really, really well spoken, and you're a master at crafting your thoughts. I think a lot of people have a hard time doing that, and you have a way with words. And so when I'm asking these questions, that I'm very interested to hear your perspective on, and you're just, you know, sort of illustrating these different instances and, you know, ecosystems and ideas. I mean, it's just, you know, very inspiring. And to your point, I feel like we could talk about it endlessly. So we may even have to discuss a part three in the future.
I'm up for
part three, man. I know you're a regular on Jeremy Lee's podcast. So maybe, you know, as we continue to grow here, we can do the same. But this has been really terrific. We're gonna round out the episode here with our rapid fire round. And so this is generally the part of the show that people like, because it's quick, it's bite-sized, and that's the type of content folks are consuming these days. So I'm gonna ask a question, and just give me the first few words that come to mind. You ready?
Yeah, let's go.
All right, favorite card in your collection?
Has recency bias here, but I recently picked up the 1997-98 Upper Deck Power Deck 1/1 of Michael Jordan, which is the first 1/1 that Upper Deck ever made. And it's one of the first Michael Jordans ever made. It's from the first year of 1/1s for Michael Jordan. It's a very obscure card. It's not even in checklist websites half the time. But I recently picked it up. I'm very excited about it.
Sick. I'll have to check it out. Dream card you still want?
Oh, there are so many. Once again, I'm going to go to Michael Jordan. And once again, I'm going to go to this is a card I'll never acquire. So let's just be really, really clear about that. But my dream card that I would love, that this just it would make my hobby dreams come true, would be his 1997-98 Ultra Masterpiece Michael Jordan. I think that's my dream card right now.
Awesome. I got a buddy here with me. This is Louie, one of my parents' four dogs, and I had a feeling he was going to start barking, so I figured I'd put him on my lap to prevent that. All right, a few more questions here. Favorite piece of hobby content you've consumed in the last year?
I'm just going to go with something super recent. Yesterday, I listened to an episode from Stacking Slabs that was a walk through the history of sports card manufacturing with Mike Phillips, currently of Upper Deck, but who also spent time working on Fleer Skybox in the 90s. So it's like this sort of walk through 90s sports card manufacturing, sort of the evolutions and the developments of products that he had an instrumental role in during the 90s, and then he went over to Upper Deck, and then he also had an instrumental role in taking products and card concepts and checklist concepts to the next level with Upper Deck too. So that can be found on the Stacking Slabs podcast network. Yeah, that's available Apple Podcasts, Spotify, etc. And it's from a series that he does called Passion to Profession, and it was one of the best hobby interviews I've heard recently.
Love it. Well, we'll have to check that out. Can you repeat the name of the piece again?
The platform or the content is called Stacking Slabs, hosted by Brett McGrath. Yep, it's called Stacking Slabs, awesome. Hosted by Brett McGrath. And it's part of a special series he's doing called Passion to Profession.
Awesome. We'll check that out for sure. All right, two more. A card you regret letting go of. Just one, because I know we all have a handful.
So all of them.
Yeah, right?
Man, there's just so many. I actually... So that Power Deck Jordan that I referenced, favorite card in my collection right now, I had to trade one of my other favorite collections to get it. One of my other favorite cards in my collection to get it. I had to trade the 1998 Mold Metal Fusion Titanium Michael Jordan to get that card. So that's one that I really regret letting go. But I, you know,
love it.
Made the trade, had to do it.
Yeah. I'll mention mine real quick, just because I don't know. Why not? Mine was the Tyrese Halliburton True Nebula from Mosaic Basketball, of like the true rookie, not the debut. I hit that out of a box, you know, candidly. I ripped, you know, it wasn't in a break or anything. I was just ripping a few boxes of Mosaic Choice years back with Blaise Sports Cards. I'll mention their name. Anyway, I hit that card, and at the time it was like, you know, Tyrese Halliburton is a big deal, but then he made the finals and went on that crazy run, and the entire time I was like, damn, just wish I still had that card. Dude, and it was such a beautiful card that, yeah, I wasn't going to let it go. And then there was a Tyrese Halliburton super collector who DM'd me on Instagram and made me an offer I couldn't refuse. And, you know, that's a part of the nature of this hobby. And I know we talk a lot about value and versus intention, and I don't want to sound like a hypocrite. But of course, look, at the end of the day, if you have an opportunity to make some money for you and your family, and, you know, you're going to do good with it and not, you know, go down a dark path or anything like that, more power to you. You know, we respect that. We appreciate that. And that's what it's all about. So, last question, advice to a new collector who just downloaded Card Ladder.
My advice to a new collector, whether they downloaded it or not, is to undertake as early as possible in one's collecting career an understanding of the full menu of cards that are available. So whether that's, you know, if a new collector is coming in as a team collector of a, you know, maybe the San Francisco 49ers or something, or they're coming in as a player collector and they love Joe Montana, this is advice really that I would give to myself as I was just starting, coming back to collecting, is that one of the most rewarding, fun parts of collecting is research, and that there is so much to learn, and there's such a collecting discovery process, and it really just a collecting fuel to be had by just truly mapping out the full menu of cards that any of the players or teams or types that we collect, whichever, whatever it may be, to fully see the total menu. And then when we do that, when I've done that, I found that cards that I just absolutely love once I discovered them, and they weren't, you know, maybe they weren't hyped, and I didn't see them on, you know, on a bunch of different reels on Instagram or on TikTok. Like they're not being constantly talked about, and maybe they don't sell for the most money. But when I discovered them and I saw that what product they came from, or what the design looked like, or sort of the story behind it, or some other fascinating, or the rarity that it had, or some other element that compelled me to take an interest in that card, that there was so much opportunity there as a collector to economically spend my hard-earned collector dollars in ways that are maximally rewarding, and that result in me, you know, not just buying into the hype or the next hyped up popular thing, but instead something that I really deliberately identified. And Card Ladder can be a nice tool to conduct price research, to sort of help me figure out what this is historically sold for. But the research goes beyond just Card Ladder. It's researching into checklists. It's really getting out my Google spreadsheet and, you know, really figuring out what the full landscape of cards is that I just wish I had started. I started really thinking and doing things that way a few years ago, and now it's 100% the way that I focus. But I wish I would have been doing that from the beginning.
Really, really well said, as always, Chris. Thank you so much. Chris, this has just been so powerful. We've talked about a number of things over the last two episodes, nostalgia. We didn't really get into the nitty-gritty data of Card Ladder, which is, I think, something that I'd love to maybe unpack in the future. I know some people might find that a little bit mundane, a little bit boring, but I think there's a lot to be said about a lot of the proprietary data that you guys are sitting on. And I know you can't, there are certain things that you can and can't share, but a lot of curiosity around that, and questions that I think that people will, appreciate hearing your answers to. So we'll table that, but we talked about ethics, we talked about speculation, partnerships, and most importantly, responsibility. And at Collectors MD, we say that the hobby can't thrive on adrenaline alone. It needs balance. It needs accessibility, and it needs a fair shot for everyone. And I think Card Ladder truly embodies those same values from a data and research perspective. You guys are doing incredible things for the hobby, in the hobby. So just keep doing what you're doing. I want to thank you again for taking the time to join us. And of course, for your partnership, which again, for those of you who joined late, we announced today Collectors MD and Card Ladder are now partners as part of their affiliate program. If you would like to download Card Ladder, please do so using our affiliate link, which you can find across all of our socials as well as on our website. I believe there's a 7-day free trial, and then it's $20 a month. So really, really great platform. Definitely checks all the boxes, you know, as far as how we talk about intentional collecting. So appreciate that. Anything else that you wanted to say or plug as it pertains to just Card Ladder or where listeners can find you?
Yeah, man. We have Card Ladder socials, to find my personal content, you can search me out. You can probably just punch into Google Chris HOJ, which the HOJ stands for House of Jordans. Just punch that into Google. Should take you to my Instagram or my Twitter or something, and or my YouTube maybe. And yeah, it'd be great. Keep the conversation going. Always love chatting with collectors. So, thanks for the platform, man.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate you. You heard it from the man himself. If you'd like to connect with Chris, you can find him on social media at Chris_HOJ and across Card Ladder's channels. And as always, if you or someone you know is struggling with compulsive collecting or overspending, join our Collectors MD peer support group meeting. It's every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. It's free, it's confidential, and it's open to anyone. You can also check out past episodes of The Collector's Compass, including episode 9, which was part 1 with Chris, along with our other shows, Behind the Breaks and Collector's MD Features, now streaming across all major platforms. Thank you all for tuning in. And remember, collect with intention, not compulsion. We'll see you next time. Thanks, Chris.